Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I am Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, welcome back to the studio. We're going through an article in the Creation Research Society Quarterly. What a fabulous publication. It's a bit technical. More technical than the Creation magazine that we go through.
That's right. They're all peer-reviewed articles written by, you know, people who are scientists usually.
Yeah.
And they've a lot of times there's a lot of detail, but there's a lot of good information for the layman.
Yeah, like as this, well. We've been looking at an article by James Powell, and he's from Texas. And Powell writes an article about stars, and as stars are burning, they're using up available energy. And so this is a fascinating topic that goes way back through the annals of science when they consider what was the original state of the universe. What was the original state of the universe? If it's moving from order to disorder, then it must have started in a really high state of order. And so Powell's article about stellar radiation, that is, that stars are burning energy, and so the entire universe is moving from a more ordered state to a disordered state, like your kid's bedroom being organized, and then it's a mess, sort of like that.
Well, I know this is one of your favorite topics, Bob. The second law of thermodynamics is what we're talking about here.
That's exactly right, and it's entropy. So that's the article, and we started this on a previous Real Science Friday. Now we want to conclude this presentation of Powell's article. So where did we leave off, Fred?
Well, we left off with a discussion of the existence of a supernatural creator. And so a good question to ask, Bob, is can a rock create itself from nothing?
Can a rock create itself from nothing? And I'd have to weigh in on the side of no, Fred.
I would, too. I'd say no. And that would be called the first law of thermodynamics.
The first law of thermodynamics, the conservation of energy and matter. So a rock cannot create itself from nothing. In fact, we closed the show by saying even a god could not create himself from nothing. That's just not possible. Nothing could create itself from nothing. So a rock, I agree, a rock cannot create itself from nothing.
Okay, let's see if you agree with this. Can a fire burn forever?
Can a fire burn forever? No, because it would use up its available energy. It's called entropy, right? That's what this is about, entropy.
That's right, from order to disorder.
Order to disorder, where energy, heat entropy, because of friction, energy is no longer as usable as it was after you use it. It becomes increasingly less usable. So you burn a log at a campfire, and you produce a lot of heat. You warm everybody up. You sing songs. You have a great time. Roast marshmallows, weenies. And then you've got smoke and ashes. Well, what if you want to have another fire, Fred?
Can we create another log from those ashes?
Well, we can't. If we got all the ashes together and all the smoke, if we made the effort to get all the smoke back, we would expend so much energy gathering all that smoke back and taking all the ashes. And then if whatever we got, if we try to burn it again, we could not have the same amount of work done, the same amount of heat generated as the first beautiful campfire.
That's right. So things are going to disorder. So that's a real interesting concept to know whether or not there's evidence for a creator.
So beginning the second half of this article on the universe and what's happening with the universe, are we going from order to disorder as stars burn fuel? The author, James Powell, reminds us, he said, okay, we're talking about entropy. So here is a reminder of what entropy is. Do you have that quote? I think it's from the Oxford Dictionary of Science.
Sure. Entropy is a measure of the unavailability of a system's energy to do work, also a measure of disorder. The higher the entropy, the greater the disorder.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this. Entropy is the measure of the unavailability of energy to do work. So the higher the entropy, the less work you're going to get done.
That's right.
Okay, that seems simple enough. You just have to remember this. And there's a Nobel laureate named Freeman Dyson, and he wrote in Scientific American back in 2007, way back in the dark ages, Fred. Scientific American, 2007, Nobel laureate, he wrote this. The laws of thermodynamics decree that energy has a characteristic called entropy. Entropy measures the degree of disorder associated with energy, the highest form of energy being the one with the least disorder, the least entropy.
So as understood scientifically, entropy is disorder or energy disorder.
Energy disorder, that's what entropy is. Okay, so I think, Fred, that the secular world of scientists, they agree with this. I mean, we're quoting from Scientific American, Oxford Dictionary of Science, and you could multiply these quotes times a thousand.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the most fundamental laws of science.
Of the physical sciences, of natural science, this is it, entropy. Okay, so now let's go back 80 years ago to a guy named Sir Arthur Eddington. Remember, Fred, this article starts out with a quote from Eddington.
That's right, and he's not a creationist. He's an evolutionist.
He's an evolutionist. I think he believed in God, but
yeah, he wasn't an atheist.
He was not an atheist. Sir Arthur Eddington, he was a contemporary of Albert Einstein. He was the first scientist to propose that star radiation is a subatomic process. That's pretty cool. And he was right. What does power stars, Fred?
Nuclear fusion?
Oh, yeah. So Eddington didn't know it was nuclear fusion, but he proposed that it was some type of subatomic process, and he was right. So back in 1929, Eddington, I'll read a quote from him. He writes, "As regards heat energy, the temperature is the measure of its degree of organization. The lower the temperature, the greater the disorganization." That's interesting.
That is interesting. That's
eventually, the whole universe will be cold in the same temperature. Eventually.
So things are cooling down?
Things are cooling down. Energy, work.
So is the universe under global cooling or universal cooling?
Global cooling? I got a book titled Global Cooling right over there in my library. You see it, Fred? The cooling has a whole chapter on the politics of global cooling. It's hysterical. Okay, so now that was 80 years ago. Now let's fast forward to this past decade. And interesting conversation. In fact, isn't there an argument from entropy for the existence of God?
Well, I believe there is. Entropy requires order and a supernatural creator.
Entropy requires a supernatural creator. In fact, there's a name for that argument, isn't there?
There is. It's called the entropic creation argument.
The entropic creation argument. Isn't there suntan lotion like that? Entropic creation argument.
Sounds like it.
So I've got here a quote, and I think the audience could follow these quotes. I've got a quote from a 1991 paper by a Peter T. Landsberg, From Entropy to God, with a question mark. And he writes, "The entropic proof for the existence of God is as follows. Entropy ensures that in an isolated system, everything moves to the same cold temperature." I'm paraphrasing him a little bit, Fred, but Landsberg points out, and pretty much all scientists agree with this, all, that everything moves toward the same cold temperature after some amount of time. And as the universe is far from the same cold temperature, is that true? Is the whole universe the same cold temperature?
It's not the same temperature.
The entire universe.
It's not,
right?
It has not reached the same temperature. That tells us something.
Some places are hot, like the sun. And then how about empty space, deep empty space?
I hear that's really cold.
Really cold, just a little bit above absolute zero. So as the universe is far from the same cold temperature, it must have a finite age and hence a beginning. This beginning must be a state of minimum entropy at which the cosmos was born. This was brought about by God, who created the initial energy and matter. That's the argument, Fred.
Okay.
That's the argument.
So he goes on to say, assuming that the entropy is valid for the universe as a whole, it's but a small step to conclude that the universe cannot have existed eternally.
It couldn't have existed eternally. And so who agrees with this? People like Albert Einstein, Stephen Hawking, the whole, name any secular atheist scientist, they agree with this, as do all the Christians. The Bible says, in the beginning, God created. And the atheists thought for a long time, they thought they could reject that, that the universe was always here, but not anymore. They know.
They know, but you know, their argument is the Big Bang. They claim that that's the start of the universe, because a lot of them tried this perpetual universe nonsense, and it's refuted by laws of physics.
Right.
But there's so many other laws of physics that are violated by the Big Bang.
Yeah, enormous violations, and we talk about that on other shows. And here's one argument that if you have an explosion doesn't produce perfectly ordered energy. And so how is it, if the universe is running down from energy order to disorder, how did it get started in the first place? And we'll have some quotes about that very issue and how entropy is an indication that there was a supernatural creator for the universe. So Einstein agrees with this. Stephen Hawking agrees with this. And Fred, you were sharing a quote and I interrupted you. Could you continue with that?
Sure. If so, it has presumably come into existence some finite time in the past, an event that many people would not hesitate to identify with a creative act.
Hmm.
The claim that thermodynamics leads to a finite-aged created universe has been called the entropic argument for creation, as we mentioned earlier.
All right, entropic argument. All right, I'm starting to get this. Now, Fred, there was a Bishop E.W. Barnes, who wrote for Cambridge University Press back in 1933. He wrote something called Scientific Theory and Religion. And I'd like to quote from Bishop Barnes, Cambridge University Press. He wrote this: speculations based on the second law of thermodynamics seem to reestablish the argument for God with the utmost directness and simplicity. The organization of the energy of the cosmos, so the organization of the energy of the universe, is always diminishing. As a result of it, there will finally be in the cosmos no organized energy capable of doing any work. In the beginning, there must have been a maximum organization of energy. Against this thermodynamical argument, we could bring no valid objection.
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, that is. It's a simple argument, and I love it. How he says, look, we've got another simple, direct argument for the existence of God.
Well, then he quotes Dr. Henry Morris, who's really the modern-day founder of the creation movement.
Yes.
If you're a creationist, you know who Henry Morris is.
Yeah, I call Morris the Copernicus of the creation movement.
Well, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, the Copernicus, Nikolai Copernicus, the founder, the father of the modern young earth creation movement.
That's right. And, you know, he had a PhD in, I think, fluid mechanics. I mean, this guy was really bright. He was highly regarded in his field.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't make evolutionists happy with his powerful arguments for creation and a creator and against evolution.
And for a global flood.
That's right. His first book was entitled, what was it, The Global Flood?
Yeah. Yeah, what a great book that was. And then he wrote Scientific Creationism.
Yep, that was a groundbreaker, too.
Yeah, it was really great.
So anyways, he loved this entropy argument, and this is what he said. He said, the entropy principle points directly to creation. That is, if all things are now running down to disorder, they must originally have been in a state of high order. Since there's no naturalistic process which could produce such an initial condition, its cause must have been supernatural.
All right. Now, Fred, you know that I have a bit of a criticism of Dr. Morris, Henry Morris, and I love the guy dearly.
Absolutely. But I am aware that you do have you take a little bit different view on entropy. I mean, I think this statement here,
this
in
statement
general, is completely
is
accurate.
Completely accurate and
but
valid.
I think you've got a good point on something that you mentioned to me, I don't know, a couple of years ago. I first heard you mention it. It's about whether or not there's a lot of Christians who think that that the second law of thermodynamics began with the fall.
Began with the fall, and I reject that, as though friction didn't exist before the fall, as though Eve would make Adam a cup of hot cocoa and it would just stay hot for days or weeks until he finally got around to drinking it.
That actually would be kind of cool. You know, I pour myself coffee and it gets cold.
Be kind of warm. Yeah. So anyway, the second law of thermodynamics, I believe, undoubtedly is a feature of the physical universe as created by God. But then there's another issue that I raise, and I think Dr. Morris was sloppy in one point, and it's caused evolutionists to be able to make an argument against us. And in fact, even in this article, at the end of it, I think there may be an error. Here it is, Fred. There are different kinds of entropy. When things go from order to disorder, that's called entropy. Well, there are different kinds. In a Mozart symphony, if somebody just blares out on a trumpet some note that's not in the symphony, everybody's going to notice, hey, what was that? That would be musical entropy. Information entropy, when information degrades, you could call that information entropy. Heat entropy, energy, that's a different kind of entropy.
Yeah, so heat entropy is going from order to disorder in the context of heat.
Heat
but
and
you
energy.
Think about information like my computer. If I spilt that cup of coffee that you talked about on my computer, it's going to destroy some of the electronic circuits. So that's randomizing it, and it's causing more disorder. So it's actually going to lose information. So the entropy of my computer would increase rapidly.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And regardless of what's going on with the heat and the available energy. So there are two separate phenomena. There is heat entropy and there is information entropy. Dr. Morris, in his early writings, he implied that you can convert one to another. So he said, because of the second law of thermodynamics, therefore we know that evolution cannot happen. And I say, wait a minute, foul. I think we just committed a foul because I agree that evolution didn't happen. But it's not because of the law of thermodynamics. Because of thermodynamics, the universe had to have a supernatural creator in the recent past.
Yeah, we all agree to that.
We all agree to that. However, with information entropy, that is, if a squid is evolving in the ocean and it's going to evolve into an octopus, it needs additional information. It needs more information. And just because we argue that the heat, the energy of the universe is going from order to disorder, that doesn't tell us directly what could happen with the information in the squid, in the squid's DNA. They're two different things. You just can't convert heat entropy into information entropy and say that what you're doing is valid. I object to that.
And I understand that. I never liked the second law argument solely against evolution. Because they always had a way out. They could always say, hey, if there's a decrease of entropy somewhere, that can be made up by an increase somewhere else.
Right, exactly.
And so as long as the sum entropies of the whole universe is going up through time, then that can solve their problem. Now, it doesn't really solve it. It's kind of an excuse, but they do have a way out. So to me, it takes away the force of the argument. I've always loved the information argument because that one is so damaging. There's no way they can get around it. And so that's what you're referring to is information entropy. In other words, information going from order to disorder.
Yeah, so let's never confuse heat entropy with information entropy, even though they both seem to be an expression of something called entropy.
That's right.
There is something called entropy, and it shows up in your kid's sock drawer and in nuclear power plants and in stars. And there's information entropy, but they're not the same. Heat and information are different.
And they're not. And you know, in a programmer, I'm a computer engineer, and if I write a program for something like Microsoft Word, which I didn't do, but I'm using this as an example because you had a problem today with Word. It has a bug in it.
Microsoft Word.
Yeah, so somewhere along the way, there's a bug occurred, and we don't know what it is, but it's causing you. You can't shut down your Windows Word.
I can't close Microsoft Word. Every time I go to close it, it says error, and it restarts.
That's right.
Come in an infinite loop with Microsoft Word.
That's an increase in information entropy. It's just like when we do that game where you tell a secret to somebody and then they tell it to five other people or
telephone tag.
The last person who reads the message is totally distorted from the first. That's an information entropy, a loss of information through that communication.
Exactly. Now, there was a debate on the internet at Theology Online I debated a talented evolutionist on this question of evolution and entropy. What started it was an article in the American Physics Journal, a refereed scientific journal, by Professor Dan Steyer. And the debate got so interesting, it went on for a couple weeks. It's online. You can go to kgov.com, search for entropy, and your entropy, it's right there. And the debate got so interesting that the author of the article in this refereed scientific journal, he joined in the debate. And we had a good time with this. And Fred, I've really tried to drive home the point to creationists. Let's not confuse information entropy with heat entropy, because here's what this Dan Steyer did. He tried to quantify, and he said, look, we know that there's entropy flux in the universe, and entropy might decrease here because it's increasing over there. So is there enough flux to allow for evolution? And he provides mathematical equations that argue that, yes, evolution could happen. And I think his argument is because we left a loophole with Henry Morris, implying that heat and information are interchangeable units.
That's right. And that's why I think you turning the conversation into information entropy and not heat entropy is crucial to the debate. Because, you know, if evolution is true, we're talking about changes in the DNA, which is information. Mm-hmm. It's a coding language, a book of that describes how our bodies are built. That's information. And if information entropy decreases, which what evolution teaches, then we know that's not possible. How can how could you increase information in something without an intelligent source? You have to have supernatural or an intelligent source to increase information. You can't do it naturalistically by random chance.
Or an explosion or a battery.
Exactly.
Or a fire.
You can't drop coffee on my computer and expect it to get more information.
Right. Or better programming or a Macintosh.
The only new information it would have is it'd be a good bookmark, a good brick.
All right. So, Fred, in a physics textbook called The Fundamentals of Classical Thermodynamics, the chairman of the Department of Mechanical Engineering at the University of Michigan, this is what he wrote. How did the universe get in the low state of entropy? The authors of this textbook see the second law of thermodynamics as man's description of the work of a creator.
That's amazing.
That is so cool, isn't it?
Well, I like, you know, and I like this Eddington, how he referred to it as, he said, traveling backwards into the past, we find a world with more and more organization.
So we go backwards into the past. In fact, you know the direction of the arrow of time? Time is moving, and entropy is so absolute and so ubiquitous that entropy, when you measure how much available energy is there, it tells you what direction time is moving. Now, we know what direction time is moving, but entropy tells you that. That is how fundamental this issue is. In the Bible, Paul wrote a letter to the Romans, and he speaks of the creation of the world, and he uses a Greek word, cosmos. And Fred, that word, that means order.
And I didn't know that until we read this article by James Powell. What an interesting connection here, that cosmos means order.
Yeah, that is absolutely so cool. God created the order of the universe.
Yeah, he created the universe. Powell noted that God created the universe with the high state of initial order, attested to by the increasing entropy we observe. Again, we observe increasing entropy.
Right.
And if you go back in time, like Eddington says, you detect increase in order, in organization.
And here's where I think Henry Morris's error is still with us. Powell, I love his article, James Powell, but he argues, he says, therefore, let's conclude that evolution could not have occurred because of the second law of thermodynamics. It would prevent any process that produced greater order. Fred, he's confusing heat entropy with information entropy, and I cry foul. I say, James Powell, I love you. Thank you, brother. You wrote a great article on why we need a supernatural creator for the universe, but we can't overreach. And I just think that's not clear reasoning, because I think if we ask James Powell, I'd like to try to reach him. If we ask him, can you convert units of information entropy and heat entropy? I bet you he'd say, well, I can't prove that you could, that they're interchangeable. We don't know that.
I'm sure he would.
Yeah. So, all right, Fred, what a great article. Do you have a final Bible verse for us?
Sure. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now.
Wow. So the whole creation is groaning, Fred. It's winding down. The Bible says that just like your clothes wear out.
Growing old as a garment. There's several places it says that.
Yeah. The stars, the galaxies are wearing out.
They're wearing out.
Yeah.
That's going to come to an end, though, at some point.
There will be
a new heavens, a new earth.
The Creator will come back to earth. There'll be a time of judgment, the great white throne judgment, and then a new heaven and a new earth. Boy, I'm looking forward to that, Fred.
That's going to be awesome.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me in another episode of Real Science Friday. What a fun time, Fred.
Thanks, Bob.
That's Fred Williams, Maranatha Christian Center. What a great school in Arvada. Our website is kgov.com. And if you're in Colorado, help with the signatures.